Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment, for those of you who are new, is a weekly podcast where I sit down and chat to some of Ireland's best and most interesting entrepreneurs. This week, we have, as I have hilariously titled it, Ireland's Willy Wonka. Because he is. He's a young guy who spotted an opportunity when he was travelling around Asia, saw a great idea, brought it home to Ireland, refined it, honed it, and has launched it here as Ireland's first hand-rolled ice cream. I'm sure you guys have seen them online. They're excellent on social media. He's a fascinating guy. We have a really, really interesting chat. We go through everything from how he spotted the idea, how he honed it and made it his own and improved it, and how he's launched it here in Ireland and what he plans to do next. It's a really gem of an episode. I know I say that every week, but I'm biased. So sit back, grab a coffee, and enjoy this week's episode with Ceylon Cullen. Ceylon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
Cool. So you've popped up in a lot of conversations in the last couple of months I've had with people.
Hope it's a good thing.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
So what I have a very interesting story. It's been told to me by a few people, and your brand and your name has popped up in a very positive way in a lot of conversations
cool.
I've had. So what is your background? How did you end up here?
I'll go back a couple of years, about 4 years ago or so. I finished college, so I was studying social science, which would be mainly like sociology and social policy and social work in UCD. So once I graduated from UCD, I went traveling around Southeast Asia, because obviously after college and everything like that, you know. And I've always had a massive passion for food since I've been in bars and restaurants since I was 13, either working in the back or prepping, working in kitchens. I worked with like fast food joints. I've always had a massive passion for food and just kind of food design and creativity when it comes to product design and food. But when I went traveling around Southeast Asia, I came across the street food vendors of Bangkok. And I don't know, Gary, have you been to?
No.
You've never been to Bangkok?
I've watched enough YouTube videos
I've
been there.
There's a really good show on Netflix about the street food scene in Bangkok and Thailand in general, and it's just a different world.
Okay.
But I was encapsulated by the whole street food culture, people sitting on the street, and I was like, this is incredible. And then that's where I came across the street food vendors doing this different technique of creating ice cream in front of their customers to order every flavor. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, why haven't I seen anything like this before? And then I stood there for like half an hour. It was like 40 degrees in the streets of Bangkok and Chiang Mai just watching it. And I couldn't believe it. And then, so I went and got it, and when I tried it, I didn't think it tasted very nice, but the whole concept and the technique was just captivating, from being able to start from basically fresh ingredients to creating any flavor, texture, whatever the customer would like. So I stayed on Thailand, learned how to do it, trained with them, they showed me a thing or two, not really with the intention of starting a business, just out of curiosity, and then they just started snowballing from there.
How did that happen? Hold on.
Yeah.
Go back a step.
Okay.
How did you end up training with them?
So I was just talking to them, and then they just showed me, and I was just standing beside them, and then they were just showing me, because like, it was before kind of Instagram, like it was 2015.
Okay.
So Instagram videos wouldn't have been as popular, and food kind of videos weren't as big. So I'd never seen anything like that before. So I don't think they'd ever gotten as much of a reaction, because it had been around since 2009.
Okay.
So it's been around a while. And so my reaction, they were just really enthusiastic. So they started showing me, and there's different techniques and styles, and I was just standing with them. I was like, oh, this is great. You know,
they're like, who's this guy?
Yeah, exactly. With the Thai street food vendors. I was like, this is a dream come true. They're actually accepting me. And I'm like 6'4". So it was a bit of a...
You do stand out.
Yeah. I stood out a bit. So they started showing me and showing me how to do it. But when I tasted it, as I said, I didn't think it tasted very nice. It was on the shelf. It was 40 degrees. Actual dairy should curdle at that temperature. It wasn't of good quality. So I was like, okay, I know we have access to the best quality ingredients in Ireland. So then when I came home, I was working in a bar at night, and then putting a plan together about the business. So because I couldn't stop thinking about it and what I had seen. And I was in Thailand for 6-7 weeks. And I saw it on my second night and just couldn't stop thinking about it for the 7 weeks.
It just hooked you.
It just, I could not stop. And I was completely hooked on the idea.
It was more the kind of the theater of it. You're saying it didn't taste very good. So
it was the whole product design, actual, not just the fact that it looks incredible and it looks cool and it's captivating and it sparks creativity, but it's also the fact that can you make it taste better? Because when it comes to food, you can make anything look good,
yeah,
but it has to be taste. Mm. Taste is the main thing when it comes to food, and that's why food is so cutthroat and so hard to get by, because taste is everything. Taste is king when it comes to food. And so then when I was working in the bar, I found out that that style had started popping up in these underground, really edgy ice cream parlors in New York, in Manhattan. Mm. So I was like, okay. So I booked a flight to Manhattan.
Nice.
Yeah, so me and the girlfriend, we went over to Manhattan and I checked out these places and I started talking to the owners and the managers about, oh yeah, so like, tell me about... And they were actually from Thailand as well. And they had started in Manhattan. So I was chatting to them. But they had been in New York a while, I think.
So did this originate in Thailand then?
Yeah, originated in Thailand. Okay. And then it eventually ended up in New York. And then that's when I went to go talk to them. See the kind of... It was an Asian technique with American designs. So it was more... like different flavors and the better quality of ingredients. Mm. So, and I was like, okay, now these guys are onto something more of what would suit Ireland. So when I was talking to them over there, I got more of a vibe of what was happening in New York. But it's funny, it was the 2nd of January, 2016. So it was just after New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And it was 11:45 PM at night and the queue, there was about 45 people in the queue. And we stood, it was New York in winter. I don't know if you've been there. It is cold. It was like -5, -6 degrees. So we stood there for about 45 to 50 minutes, just waiting to get ice cream in the snow. Waiting to get into this underground ice cream parlor in New York. And got in, just loved it. The whole design and idea and everything about it. So that's when I knew, when people are standing outside in New York and -5, -6 degrees, it's not just because it looks cool, but in New York, it actually tasted what matched the quality that I could get in Ireland and what we could do in Ireland. And so then I came back to Ireland, started working with chefs that I knew, started developing recipes myself, just doing all sorts of things like, and developing ratios and blends. And then finally got to a point where there's no preservatives, there's no guar, no xanthium, nothing artificial in our ice cream. So that's when I got to that point. So I was like, okay, I'm happy with it, and start going from there. And then the same with our vegan mix as well. So we make all our vegan from scratch in our store. And so there's no preservatives. So I worked with some of the best vegan chefs that I knew in the markets, because we were asked for it, and started going from there. And
so were you just literally sitting at home going, right, I'm going to figure this out? Like, were you just like, you'd learned a little bit in Thailand,
yeah,
a little bit more in New York.
Yeah.
What did you do when you came home then? Were you like, okay, I have to do this?
But that's it. Like, I had no previous... Well, in school and college, like, I'd sell tickets and, like, other, like, protein and all this kind of stuff. So I've always had, like, an entrepreneurial kind of mindset as well. I've always wanted to start a business, especially in food. It was either going to be fitness and food. Like, that's what I love. And when I came across the technique, that's when I knew it was something completely different, never seen in Ireland before. Like, I would walk into a restaurant and I'd be like, what could I do differently here? Like, I'm not saying these guys are doing anything wrong here, but what would I do differently if this was my restaurant, or if this was my, like, fast food, casual dining type of situation? What would I do differently? So I sat home and was like, what is the consumer looking for there? I could have made it edgy. I could have made it like really bold, really like sharp images and coloring and kind of on edge, like some fast casual restaurants are.
Yeah.
Or I can make it appealing to all demographics, from a place where families can bring their kids and feel at home. Whilst I was 22 at the time, so I was like, where would I like to go? Okay. Someone that's 22 that would like to go, or even older than, we've had people in their like 80s come up to us, like, you know, and get ice cream. So somewhere that transcends all demographics. And that's what I wanted to do with the brand. Make it approachable, make it fun, make it creative, and make it innovative. And that's when I saw, like, in New York, it was a bit edgy, but I knew that wouldn't really fix in
that's
Ireland.
That's New York, though.
That's New York, exactly.
They want that.
And they have the population to do it as well. In Ireland, you have to suit, our population is so low. If you start going edgy with it, you cut out so much. And ice cream is already as competitive as any other industry you're going to find. So, like, because you're all competing kind of for the same space, it's just all about innovation. Can you do something a bit different? So I wanted to appeal to everybody. And that's what I wanted to do with the brand as well. So somewhere that I'd go, somewhere like my kids would go, somewhere my grandparents would go,
That's a big vision for someone that young.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make people feel at home, that they could have whatever they want. So we tailor to all taste preferences or dietary requirements. So if you're gluten-free, that's fine. If you're nut-free, if you're egg-free, if you're lactose intolerant, if you have any ailment, we're able to accommodate you. Like, there's families that come up who are lactose intolerant and also gluten-free. That's fine. We're one of the only places that they can go to get ice cream with our vegan mixes and our other ice creams as well. So
that's incredibly topical right now. I mean, there's so many people that have major impacts. Mm. A friend of mine has shellfish, you know.
Yeah.
Another friend has egg.
Mm.
Was that something that's in your past in terms of, does someone you know have that? Or how
not
are you
really
able to tap into that? Because that's something now, I think 2019, I think that's now people are like,
yeah, of course,
hypersensitive, conscious vegan, etc. But 2016, that still would have been a bit.
Yeah, but as I said, like, I was in food since I was 13. So I was working in restaurants and kitchens, and like, someone would come in and say, like, oh, this person is celiac, you better watch out, make sure this is. So I was picking up on these things that people are now becoming more aware of what they're eating and where it's coming from and what is actually in it. I've always loved food, and to be able to bring everybody, and like, doesn't matter what dietary requirements you got, we're able to accommodate you. Doesn't matter what age you are, I just want you to feel that you're more than welcome to come down, sit, chill, just enjoy yourself. And that's basically what I wanted to do, with it, kind of transcend everybody, you know, every preference, every demographic. And that's what I kind of feel, that's kind of why we've taken off now in the last year or two, you know.
And how, so take me back to kind of like, you're back from New York, what was your next steps then? How did you start going, okay, I have an idea?
Yeah, so we were talking earlier about actually just getting going. I'm going to put the date this, and then you just put the deadlines, like, this day, no messing around, you know. This is the day I'm going to launch, no two ways about it. So you're like, you're putting it off. But I was working in the bar at night and developing the business plan and contacting, meeting with people who were in the food business, meeting people who had other businesses during the day constantly. And then putting all my money aside and saving up all my money and reinvesting it so into the actual concept. I used to work in a market stall startup, so in a food market stall startup in People's Park in Dunleary. So food markets, I'd already done it. So I knew what food markets were about. So I used to look after the food market and stuff for that particular restaurant. And so I knew how to get the equipment that I needed for HSE reasons, cleanliness, hygiene. I've done all my HACCP trainings and stuff like that. So that was handy, being in the food industry before.
So you knew, because food is one of those areas I know literally zero about.
It's tough.
I know what I like,
me. Yeah, there's so many small bits to it, from HSE reasons to insurance reasons to everything, to make sure that your food safety, that you are applicable to everyone. So I started just reinvesting, doing a bit more research into branding, ideas, just kind of flavor profiles, what we can do. And then I made my first purchases from China, from the machinery, because there's nowhere that would be able to do machinery in Europe. I couldn't find anywhere. I was researching forever to try to find them, and then I found them in China and got them in from here into Ireland. And then got my tent and my pop tent and everything designed and did up from there. And then in April 2016, I did a small launch night for family and friends to see what the reaction would be. I had a few friends and family over to try the ice creams and stuff like that to my house. You know, there's ice cream going everywhere. Yeah. People getting annoyed in the kitchen and whatnot. But then I did the pop-up to get a real reaction. I had 100 flyers. Everyone had to give me critiques, be as negative as possible for me to learn. Anyone can tell, especially with food, the easiest thing to say about food is that it's great or it tastes nice. What's the hardest thing is to critique food.
The Irish one, it's grand.
It's grand.
Feedback you never get.
Oh, Jesus. It was driving me mental. Some of my friends were just like, not giving me anything. I was like, I need you to tell me what's wrong. Like, what would you do better? Time, ratios, what flavor would you prefer? All this kind of stuff, getting into the head of what the consumer wanted.
So did you teach yourself? So you got the equipment in.
Yeah.
Did you just teach yourself then how to do it?
Yeah. So when I was in Thailand, I had an idea, I had a vision. I knew how long it was taking them per one. I was looking at their styles, and I had it all on videos as well. So I was rewatching the videos, and then there was like videos on YouTube as well. So I already had the idea of what I was doing, and then I was able to put what I learned in Thailand and New York to what I was doing here.
What's it called? Just for people who don't actually haven't seen your stuff before.
Yeah, so basically, it's funny. In Ireland, it's called hand-rolled ice cream, but that was because I coined it hand-rolled ice cream. Because I wanted to make it sound artisan. In Thailand, it's called I Tin Pan, which means ice rolls. In America, it's called ice cream rolls. In the UK, it's called something different. And in different countries, it's called something else. In Ireland, I wanted to make it sound artisan, and that's why I said hand. I was going to say handcrafted rolls, but people may not get that.
Yeah.
So I just went with hand roll. I coined the phrase. I sat down. It was actually one of the hardest things. Was going to call it ice cream rolls or what was I going to do? So I ended up calling it hand rolled and just go for it. And it was probably the best decision I've ever made because it piques curiosity because people still don't know what it is. I've been doing it for over 3 years.
Right.
So people come up to me, add to our market stall or our shop in Black Rock, and they're like, what is hand rolled? And they're like, well, we start basically.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have this already done. And that's because it piqued curiosity. And then food is great because if you can do that and you can sell it, and by just speaking and kind of creating the image of how good the actual product is and then they try it, that encapsulates all the senses. So that's basically what I wanted to do with calling it hand roll. I wanted to ask for them to ask a question and then to ask me. And then me to be able to explain them something a bit different. Now, not all the time. It's very tough some of the times. So, people will come up and I don't get it. I'm like, well, I've explained it to you, but, you know, they just don't get it sometimes. Because it's such a novel, new concept, and we're the first ones in the country to do it. So, people still don't understand or appreciate what goes into it. Like, it takes 60 seconds to make each one. Each one is made in front of you. Whatever ingredients that you want, you know. So, and then once they see us doing it, I usually say, just watch us do it, and then you'll understand it a bit better. And
so, us through what exactly it is.
Okay, so basically, as I said, it's an Asian technique. So, this plates, we have these cold plates that we have in front of us, and they sit at minus 30 degrees on average. And what you do is you start off with your fresh cream base, or for us as well, we have our fresh coconut vegan base as well. So then we pour on, so let's say you want strawberries and meringue. We throw on fresh strawberries and meringue, and then we're able to create that flavor by pouring the liquid onto the cold plates and turning it into a solid in a matter of, we aim for about 60 seconds per one, you know? And that's how you're able to create any flavor. So if someone wants, let's say lemon and chocolate, that's fine. We're able to do that for you because we have those ingredients. We start off with those ingredients and then we pour on the fresh cream base from there. And then so on and so forth. We're able to create any flavor from there, from Oreo to Kinder Bueno.
So it's a bit Willy Wonka. You can
exactly, yeah. That's what they say. Yeah, you can create anything. And that's what I wanted to do. Like, don't let the flavors that are on our menu cap your creativity when it comes to what you want. And it's all I encourage innovation among all my staff and my customers. So I'm like, what do you want? And they're like, oh, I want to. So we've done from likes of red wine and chocolate for people. If we have it, we can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and we worked with the likes of Jameson and
you Gibbs. Cropped up my missus came home, Michelle came home.
Yeah.
I think it was two weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And she came home, she goes, because they're always getting stuff, they're always getting cool stuff.
Yeah.
Work for yourself. She always come home, she'd be like, oh, you'll never guess what we had today. I was like, go on. She goes, I think it was Jameson Ginger Ale and Lime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
And you'd started to pop up in different conversations, and I seen you doing some kind of cool stuff. She goes, yeah, these guys. And I was like, I bet I know who it is.
Yeah.
I said, you're in it. She goes, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, mental. Because I didn't know. I knew what you guys were doing roughly, but I didn't know you had that level of detail in terms of you could do anything.
But that's what I wanted to do. I'm a big guy for product design as well and food design. So if we can create something completely out of the box. So as I said, we've worked with pairing of dishes we've worked in the likes of Meatopia, which is the big meat festival in Guinness Storehouse, where we paired our ice cream with different things like salt and caramel and all this kind of stuff to go with the food. And that's what we did with Guinness, our Jameson as well. We did Jameson ginger and lime flavor. We make bespoke menus for we've worked with the likes of Google and Facebook, Amazon, weekly, because whenever they're doing a product launch, we've worked with Benefit Cosmetics, they wanted a red one to suit their new lipstick. So we're like, yeah, okay, strawberry meringue. And they were like, that's perfect. It's the exact shade of what we want. We worked with the likes of Lidl, who wanted a tropical theme vibe. So we did mango, kiwi, papaya. You know, so we're able to encapsulate whatever vibe and create like a bespoke menu to suit any like anything, any event. And that's what I wanted to do with also our shops, our stalls, and our private events, to kind of whatever you want, we can do it.
So dig into that for me a little bit. Yeah. I want to come back to how you started, but I just want to stay on this for a sec. Dig into that. Was that specific in terms of you knew you'd be brand partnerships and this level of detail would work well with brands, or was that something that just happened?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of happened. And then when I saw there was a market for it, because we got an inquiry from a big company, I think it was Penny's or Primark, and they asked us to do an event to suit their new spring-summer launch. And we were like, okay, and they wanted like a fruit-based, so it was like, as I said, like strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, any like fruit-based for what they wanted with the vibe of the event. And I was like, okay, we can do that, it's no problem. So we did out a menu, we like made each flavor, we trialed it, we tasted, that was the tough part, trialing each flavor, you know, someone has to do it, you know. But... yeah, so then we're able to create the menu for what they want. And then I was like, okay, kind of a bit of a light bulb moment went off. You know, I was like, okay, so if it works for them, they were ecstatic, 5-star reviews, great stuff, happy days.
So they reached out to you?
Yeah, they reached out to us. Cause
that's
they
pretty big for you in business.
Yeah, we had only been in business 2-3 months, you know,
really?
And then we got that client, you know, and I was like, whoa, this is big. So we kind of dropped everything. We're like, okay, we have to make sure all the bells and whistles, everything works for what these guys want. And so I was like, okay, they're happy. Why don't I start like going more for it? So we've worked with Kraken Rum, where we've done a rum flavored ice cream with rum raisins. We've done likes of Copperberg flavored ice cream. So event companies now reach out to us if they're launching a new product or an alcohol or any particular product, and they come to us and like, yeah, we'll do it for you, we'll be able to create an ice cream to order for your customers and just give them that kind of experimental wow factor, I like to call it.
That's rare now.
You know, so that's what I want to do. And then we're always one of the talking points of, because not only is the quality and the taste, because I wanted to back up what we do with quality and taste, once that's there as well, so people come back, you know. So it was like, oh yeah, they're grand, like if we did something for them and they said it looked cool but didn't taste nice, it's like, then why would we get them back?
Yeah, novelty is fine for one.
That's
not a business. Yeah.
But that's it. Novelty is great. But you can always sell something to someone once, but you can't do it twice. You know, that type of way. And that's why we worked with Jemison, I'd say, 10 times now.
Wow.
You know, they do the homecoming every year, and
yeah,
we do that every year. That's where your girlfriend was at, and that's what we do. And we've done it for the last 3 years in a row. And we're actually going back now in August to work with them again. We've worked with like Google, like say 7 times in the last 3 weeks.
Wow.
You know, different events from Google Ads to other like departments, because they want us to create the menu for them. And because we can create a menu and do like taste and dietary requirement preferences, so we can do a completely vegan Jemison ginger and lime flavor. You know,
that's
so
normal,
that's
yeah,
completely rare. No one can do that. It's never been seen before, but we can do it because we put a lot of work into the taste and to the quality control and actual research behind each flavor. We don't just throw it out and just be like, hey, there you go.
You don't just buy it off the shelf and lash it out.
Exactly.
So bring me back to, so you started, you were doing the trials.
Yeah.
And then people were like, yeah, I think you've got
something. They've got it, but friends are great, you know. They'll tell you, oh yeah, they'll tell you this, that and the other, that you're great. But behind your back, they'll be like, oh no, it's crap.
Yeah.
You know, but I want them to be as brutal as honest. I've made it anonymous as well on the sheets. Don't sign your name. I want you to write down what is wrong. And then they did, and I learned from those sheets. I was like, okay, this is what I need to do, this we need to get better, this designs, this the logo, all this kind of stuff. And so then a month later I put it up on Facebook and on Instagram, that I'm opening a market stall, like a quick pop-up stall, like a pop tent in Blackrock Market, in May of 2016, so just over 3 years ago. And then absolute flyer from there. Like, it just was crazy. I thought it'd be a few friends and family coming down, but just randomers coming down that they'd heard about it or seen it somewhere. Like, people who I hadn't seen in years. And it was great to see. It was great to get that support as well from the local community as well. Some people from Black Rock were coming down, like, oh, this is so cool.
So did you start doing that at the weekends? Or then
so it was
how
just
did that
Saturday
work?
And Sunday. Yeah, so it was just Saturday and Sunday. And then I was just during the week, I was still working in the bar and stuff like that, just keeping ticking over and stuff like that, putting money back in, and then doing the weekend markets and weekend markets. And then after 2 weeks, I don't know if you've been to People's Park in Dunleary.
Yes.
It's one of the busiest food markets in the country.
Yeah.
Like, it is
very nice.
Crazy busy. And it's very competitive there. The waiting list is like 4 years long.
What?
But yeah, yeah.
To get a stall.
To get a stall in there, yeah. It's very, very competitive. It's very hard to get in. And then I approached them with what we were doing. I was 22. And I was like, this is what I want to do. Give us a trial.
You're 2 weeks in the other place.
2 weeks. I have 2 weeks in business. And then I was asking to go into the busiest spot in the country market-wise, you know, during a peak of somewhat of a heat wave as well. So I was like, okay, this may be ambitious, but just go for it. Like, just approach them before it gets too late. And it's still May, so the summer hasn't fully kicked off. So if it had gone any further in, it'd be like, ah, no, you're grand. Like, you know, don't. We'll wait till next year. And that would have been too long. So I was like, okay, approach them, just go up to them. And they were always saying, send emails. I was like, nah.
Too slow.
That's too slow. And then you're waiting on responses. You're waiting 2 weeks. So I got a clipboard of everything, all product pictures, designs, everything. This is after 2 weeks. And I went actually to the market and approached the market manager. I was like, this is what I want to do here. I don't suppose you'd be, like, I had to ask for it to come out. And I was like, can I meet with you? And this is what I want to do. Is it feasible? Is it okay? Is it possible? She was like, let's give you a trial. I was like, okay, let's do it. So they gave us a trial, 1 day trial, and we sold out in our first day.
I never knew it was so competitive to get into places like this.
It's like, people ask me the whole time, how did I get in? And I don't know. I think a bit of luck and a bit of just, I came with something a bit different that they'd never seen or never done before. So I was like, okay. And I was young, so I had nothing to lose by going to them.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was like, yeah, why not? Like, and approached them, they said, yeah, let's still give you a trial. And then we passed our trial, they were happy out with us. And then we just...
So you just wanted to make sure you weren't going to bomb out.
Yeah, exactly. And then, because you have a lot of market traders that will do 2-3 weeks. It's kind of like a passion project.
Yeah.
It's like 2-3 weeks, like, that's grand.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
The millions aren't rolling in. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have a bad day and it's lashing rain and you're selling ice cream. Are you going to stick with it? Or are you... Like, anyone can sell ice cream during the summer.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously the quality, that's also another thing. Ireland's so temperamental. You know, it was 20 degrees when I was getting in the car and it started raining on the way in. You know, so...
So I was going to ask you, this is going to be one of my next questions.
Yeah, and so you have to prepare for that. And that's why the quality always has to back up, that people come during the snow. Not just novel factor, not just... good customer service is obviously key, especially when it comes to food, but also the taste as well and quality. But anyway, so they said we passed the tests, come back next week. And I was like, okay, cool. And then just... they were happy with us, and then we've become a full part of that market every Sunday. And I think we're the last food stall to get in 3 years.
And did you kept going to other places as well?
No. So that was very raw. So it was 2 weeks and I didn't have enough funds. So it's all self-funded,
okay.
You know, so I didn't have any investor or anything like that. So I didn't have enough to do two setups at the one time.
Okay.
And then, so we were just doing the weekends, market stalls, doing the odd thing during the week, like a food market or whatever. Someone would ask us to come in and do, like, they're hosting like a market stall inside or something like that situation. And then just doing them, and we were doing well, like every weekend, like people, we were the busiest event again. It was summer. It was a very hot summer. So I couldn't get carried away with myself.
I was going to say, how did you feel in the early days? Like, what was...
At the start, I was, but like, I was having a great time with it. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of hard work, don't get me wrong. Like, food, especially market stalls, like, you could be there and you could have a queue of like 20, 30 people and you're selling ice cream. It's all happy days. And then dark clouds and boom. Lash and rain, people are gone. And you're like, no.
You're there for the next 6 hours.
Yeah, you're there for the next 6 hours, just sitting there feeling sorry for yourself. But you just got to dry yourself off and just be like, okay, next week, just keep going. And just keep going, and just keep going, and keep going. It doesn't matter how wet you are. Like, if customers are coming back, then you know you're doing something right. And then we were just doing the odd market stall, as I said. And then for about a year or so. And then my brother came fully involved. Like, he's been a massive influential character in the whole business. Was my brother. And so he left his job in August. I want to say to come basically full-time with me now. When I say full-time... we weren't really paying ourselves full-time salary, you know, startup. You know yourself,
there,
like, you're
not
paying yourself. And especially ice cream, seasonal. During the winter, you just have to just start designing things, putting a plan together. What can you do? Different avenues. Approach this person. 199 doors closed, one opens type situation. So my brother kind of kept me motivated and kept me going throughout the whole thing. So he was a big factor in actually getting us to where we are today.
What was his background?
He was in restaurants. So he was the manager of some of the best restaurants in Dublin. So he's 3 years older than me, and then he was managing a really high-end restaurant in Dublin. So he knew the food scene. We've all been in food scene. So we've all been waiters and like bartenders and food since we were like 13. So he was big into food, and he knows detail a lot better than what I do. What my bad traits are his good traits, and vice
incredible
versa.
To have that.
So it's very handy.
That's incredible.
It's very, very handy. So he's very good at kind of seeing things that I would never see, but in finer detail and being able to explain it better. So he was able to do a lot of that kind of situation. And whilst I was able to approach people and talk to people and kind of get us the chance, he was able to give them a bit better design. So he was good at that. And then we kept going then through the winter. It was funny, like we were still 6 months selling ice cream in the peak, like 22nd of December, 3 days before Christmas, standing there and it was snowing, like, you know, I'll never forget that, you know, and I still do that, you know, we still do that.
But they're the days
you're like, all right, I always say to myself, if I can sell one ice cream in the snow, that's something, you know, that means that we're having an impact on someone else's life. It's not, and that makes them happier. It's not just, here you go, see you later. It's the whole customer experience, the whole what's brought about by what we do. And so then we kept ticking by enough to keep...
You're up to December now.
We're up to December, yeah, in the first 6 months. And it just kind of kept on. Like, numbers weren't going down. In January, it was a warm, like, maybe 12 degrees, and we were flat out. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, this... It's winter. Like, people are... Like, when I started the business, people were like, Kevin, you're going to sell ice cream in Ireland, in a cold country. What do you have? I was like, oh, I think let's try this, you know? It just kept going. And every Sunday, we were in our markets, keep going. And then we started getting more inquiries for private events. And I don't know how that happened. I think just word got out. So events companies will talk to other events companies. There'll be one person that leaves one to go to another. And be like, I had a really good experience with that guy. Let's get him involved. And then they'll have friends in another one. And they all kind of talk to each other. Obviously, they're all still fighting for the same space as well for events. But they all still like each other and all admirable. So they all like pass on details. So our number got around. And since then, we've been working like hundreds of private events.
And did that... What was your growth strategy then after, say, the People's Park?
Yeah.
Were you like, do we keep going with this? Do we get a retail location?
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
So I kind of had, you know yourself, Gary, like, you put the 1, 2, 3, 5 year plan. Yeah. It doesn't really work.
It just falls off.
You just kind of just go do whatever then after a while. Like, it's all great to have it on paper, but like, obviously it's good, a little roadmap to have, but roads go different ways. Like, you know, so like you just go different ways with it. So my whole intention was to open a retail store after 2 years, do the market stalls. I was 22, do the market stalls for two years. And if I can make concepts work in a market stall, then be able to go out from there. Then an opportunity came to open a shop in Black Rock, actually in the Black Rock market. So one of the kiosks came available in there, and I was like, okay, I'm going to take it. And then we just went with it from there. So in May 2017, I had signed, basically a year on, basically signed a lease to take over that kiosk. And then in June started construction, and then in August 2017 we opened. And you know, it's been flying ever since. You know, it's been quite busy. Like, it's not then a main street, it's not high end, it's not high retail, but we're trying to create a vibe around it that is kind of a hidden gem.
Destination, exactly.
And that's what I want to do. And because I've been offered leases and I've seen properties, I've gone to have 101 meetings with people like realtors and stuff like that about certain spots, and it just doesn't fit, and it just doesn't feel right. And then you're talking key monies, then you're talking this, that, and the other.
Especially now, like,
everywhere,
it's gone crazy.
It's mental, you know. Like, it's just every time, like, I look at the key money, it's always far more than what it was last year, you know. And it's just hard when you're a seasonal business to justify taking out that much, you know.
Especially
unless you're guaranteed,
exactly,
self-funded. So you can't guarantee, you know, if it works in Black Rock, is it going to work somewhere else?
Yeah.
You know, if I go out to Malahide, is it going to bomb? I don't know, but you don't know until you take the risk. But again, the key monies, the rents, the rates, the commercials, all this kind of stuff do add up, especially the seasonal business. You have to guarantee that you're going to hit the ground running. So I wanted to open a Black Rock, and if I can make something from a small kiosk of like, it's 15 square meters, like it's tiny.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's small. But if I can do something with that space and create a go-to spot, hang outside, like date night, whatever,
yeah.
you know, for all demographics, then we could go somewhere else and create something. It's not just the product that we do, but it's everything that we encapsulate. From a customer experience has to be up there. Like, as I said, like, I've been working in restaurants, so I know the importance of customers. And they may like the food, but if they don't get terrible service, like, fuck it, I'm not going back there. You know,
so as an owner,
yeah.
you can see your passion. You can
yeah.
hear your passion. How do you then translate that to someone else? So you can't work 365.
Of course.
You probably have.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you scale something out and you go to multiple locations, how did you approach that?
Yeah, so like during the summer of last year, even this year, and a bit of 2017, we're in 3-4 different locations. So we could be at a festival, we could be at a market stall, we have our shop in Black Rock, and then we could be doing a private event all at the same time. So I still screen all the staff to make sure they're up to what I would like them to be at. Like, some people come to me with no experience, but I get a bit of a spark off them, you know, and I always say to them, like, I want to teach you what I've learned when I was younger to kind of show on to other people, as opposed to, there you go, see you later, like, figure it out yourself. I'm going to show you how to deal with customers who are being rude to you, or I want to show you how to deal with just any situation. Think on your feet, and it's the best thing you can give to people. I think, like, if you show people how to deal with situations that are stressful, they'll be fine. They won't be ringing you, Kayla, like, oh, you know,
yeah.
I'm stuck here, can you help? It's like, figure it out, okay? Like, I showed you this, you can do it, you got this. And that's what I believe in my staff as well. Like, everyone's in the same boat. We always get such great reviews about the staff, that they're always super, they're always friendly, and people always say, like, the taste and having quality and ice cream is incredible. But not only that, is your team behind you are just amazing as well. We always get that, and that's why our private events, our clients become our clients for life. Like, so far anyway, for life anyway. Like, that's why they always get us back, because we make sure that we give them the best possible customer experience, because without customers you don't have anything.
How do you instill that in people? Do you get a sense of someone, or how do you instill that level of quality? Because
yeah,
it's tough.
It is tough, and don't get me wrong, if someone told me the stresses of starting with a food business, with a quality control business of obviously food, and then staff as well, would I have started, you know, like, you just kind of have to learn these things. But staffing is by far the hardest part in the food industry, I think, so far. Obviously keeping quality high is main priority as well, and then customer service, but it's just staff is the hardest. From you train people and then they end up getting a full-time job. Like, most of our staff are part-time. So it's obviously seasonal business. It's kind of hard to give people the hours. And then during the summer, you have 20 people on the books and rosters and all this kind of stuff. And then during the winter, it's a quarter of that. You know, so they can get more hours somewhere else. But you want them to, in some way, believe in what you want to do and kind of just buy into the image. And there's a reason why we've won the awards and why customers come back, is because of greeting with a smile, just general, if they need anything, help them out. It's just going that extra mile for customers. And I always just instill that. It's like, the customer is our most important person. Like, do them good and they always come back. You know, they just enjoy it. But yeah, it is hard to find that in people. So people aren't passionate about other people. That's just
yeah.
life. And especially customer service, because it is hard. You can be good with people, but you may not be good at customer service.
Yeah,
especially with
yeah.
food. And to get that in someone is rare, but once you find that, Jesus, it's fantastic, because you can just sit back and watch them and you're like,
the relief, yeah.
You can just, like, they're smashing it. You know, like, you feel proud in a way. You're like looking at them like, Jesus, fair play to them. They are killing it. And they've just got like a 5-star review, their name was mentioned, and you're like, fair play to
yeah.
you know. So
it's cool to see an employer with that attitude,
but
as
that,
well, because some people don't take that attitude,
but
know?
That's I've worked in
yeah
where I felt like, geez, if I walked out right now, what, they wouldn't even care. It's like, next, rotating door. But I know when, if someone ever left Arctic Stone, I'd be just like, I'm sorry to see you go. If you ever need anything from me, here's a reference. Like, they may only be with me for like a few weeks, but I really enjoyed them, as long as they didn't run off like doing something like but they shouldn't be, you know? Like, yeah, so like, I was always told, don't walk away from a job, then calling you a dick. You know, you don't want that image, you don't want that, a bad reputation. So I always say to them, like, look, be admirable, and I always want the best for you as well. So let's, yeah, I want to train you and get the best from you as well. And that's always paid back, and I really do appreciate any time they show up for a shift, if I have to call them in last minute. Yeah. I'm like, I really appreciate that, you legends. I really, like, I try and go out of my way to appreciate it from staff nights out, to just kind of show them, like, fair play to you, well done, dropping them a text. Because I was, as I said, I've worked in hotels and bars, so we're just literally like, you don't even know my name, lads. Like, yeah. You know, like, I've worked here for 6-7 months, and the general managers or managers wouldn't even know my name. You know, they'd have no respect for you at all. But why would I want to run a business where I can't walk into a place smiling? They'd walk into a business just sour puss in their face, just looking
miserable. Don't want to be there, yeah.
You know, it's ice cream. You know, that's, you know, like, it's not, like, I've sold funeral insurance before. You know, that was a part, that was another job of mine. And it's not that. You know, you want to make people happy, and you bring that, like, they're coming to you because it's a happy product. It's a symbol of good times. It's good nostalgia for people as well. People always remember ice cream from their kid,
yeah,
from their younger years, you know? So if you can bring that to them and make them happy and just give them the whole experience, then life's a lot better. Like, life's a lot happier. It's a lot more enjoyable than walking in and, like, just do the job. Like, you don't want that. You want to walk into somewhere where there's a good vibe. Mm. And that's what I wanted to do. And at the end of the day, they're all kind of similar-ish to my age as well. No one's older than me. So I don't want them walking and dreading the job as well. You know? And then that just transcends onto the customer. And if I walk in with a smile on my face and I'm happy, okay, I may be stressed. And they can see when I'm stressed, I can run around the shop. But I try and not pass that over as much as I can, you know, especially with food and customer service. Because if there's a stale atmosphere, you ever walk into a place like coffee shop, no one's talking to each other. There's just, because obviously someone has just gotten absolutely, like, just given out to, and they just, and everyone can feel the tension and the vibe, and you just don't want that.
Or they're just talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Equally, and yeah, they're just like looking at you, they're talking.
It's like, oh, something. Sorry, I didn't realize you were there. You know,
you're just like standing with your money out. You're like, yeah, that's the opposite as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just to make sure they know that, even to acknowledge. You ever walk into, as I said, like a coffee shop, and the people are like chatting away, and they don't even acknowledge you. Even if you say, "Hi, how are you?" and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna choose now in a second." You know, that's fine. But as long as you acknowledge that they're actually standing there and that you know they're there,
yeah,
it's like, oh yeah, I could have walked in and walked out, they wouldn't even know. But you want to.
Yeah, we go to Honest to Goodness Cafe here.
Yeah.
And we go there every week.
Yeah.
Because the people are incredible.
Yeah. Nice. And that's the way to do it.
Hazel works there. She is just the friendliest person. Mm. Smile on her face every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's so rare nowadays, especially.
100%, yeah, yeah.
Especially in Dublin, big cities. You know, if you go home to Nina or whatever, you go into a cafe, you know, people know you. But like, here, it's so rare.
Mm.
And it's so refreshing. And we go there religiously.
Because of those reasons as well, yeah.
Yeah, literally. All my meetings are there.
Mm.
If I should meet someone for a coffee, it's there. If we have our team meetings, they're there.
Yeah.
It's huge. Like, I think people overlook the fact so much.
And that's why the staff that are able to do that and are able to transcend that kind of positivity over to the customer, it's rare. But you also can teach it as well. And you can, if they want to learn it,
mm.
I can always get that sense. Yeah. Exactly. I can always get that sense when I'm talking to someone. So, as I said, like, I did social work and social policy and sociology in college. So I can understand. I feel like I can kind of understand when there's a mood or someone just doesn't want to do something. So if they are willing to learn what I've learned and me try pass it over to them, then, like, it's invaluable, really, because they can just, they're able to pass over that positivity to people as well. You know?
And how did you develop the brand? We actually skipped past that.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you come up with that? Like,
I can't take credit for the name because my girlfriend came up with that. Because the plate sit at minus 30 degrees, the Arctic sits an average minus 30 degrees.
Oh, I see what she did.
So there. Yeah, and then the stone, I didn't want to call it a plate.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, Arctic stone. It just kind of works. Like a cold stone, Arctic stone. It just works.
Yeah.
And so that's what I thought. It was a lot better. I had a few names. Like Frosties, I don't know why. Like, I did a whole business plan. I was like, no, screw that. Like, it was like weeks.
Tony the Tiger be knocking on your door.
But that one, and I also had the Rolling Stone.
Oh, right.
So I would have had Mick Jagger.
Trademark.
Yeah, on my ass, and I didn't want that. So I was like, right, these are terrible. One of the hardest parts is naming something.
It's so hard.
It's so tricky. And then you look at the trademarks as well to make sure you're not crossing over. And then I felt like there was no trademark. There was no other company across the world called Arctic Stone. So I was like, okay, this is one of the, I can call my
that's
website.
That's rare.
It's very
rare.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when I saw that. Because if I called it the Rolling Stone, I'd done designs and paid graphic designers and everything for the Rolling Stone ice cream company. And then if you typed in Rolling Stone Dublin, you're going to get the Rolling Stone Museum. You know, you're going to get like 20 different things before you actually get the ice cream. But if you type in Arctic Stone, we're the first ones.
That's incredible.
That's why I was like, okay, I need to get something that we're the first. Because what I've seen on Google Analytics as well is, people will type in ice cream near me. That's the number one thing they search.
Really?
So if it was the Rolling Stone, like we may not be up there because our SEO wouldn't be as high. And that's just something that I learned as well. You know?
I think that's what modern businesses have to consider. I spoke to someone this morning about the exact same thing. I'm fascinated by names. And
yeah, of course.
I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
And she said the exact same thing. And it's so important because there's so much noise.
Yeah.
I'm sure, especially in food.
Yeah,
trying
massively.
To stand out.
Yeah.
It must be so tough.
Especially, and then you have as I said, ice cream is one of the most competitive and cutthroat industries when it comes to food. It's incredible because we're all fighting for a cool dessert space.
Yeah.
And then you have like some Teddies and stuff like that are in there. And
the institutions.
You know, they've been around for years and years and years. And you're sure, and we went into Dunleary, one of the most competitive ice cream.
Right between their two shelves.
Right between them, like, you know, so they, like, it was so competitive. And to stand out, and then also search engine online to stand out as well, was important. And that's, again, I have background in social work. So, like, I didn't know that until I started. It's like, okay, I needed to stand out online because some of the ice cream parlors would have been set up 20 years ago before search engine was actually a proper thing. So I was like, okay, we need to stand out. We need to have one of the strongest if we can. And that's why differentiating our name, doing things like online from Instagram to YouTube, getting viral videos, getting content out there as well was important, you know? So and that's how we scale our SEO. That's why we come up with ice cream near me so much, because of those reasons. But then again, Rolling Stone would have been a disaster.
So you've obviously thought that strategy out quite carefully.
Mm.
But what you do is quite visual. So how did you plan that out in terms of your kind of your social and things like that?
It's just, well, when I said, like, people also do eat with their eyes as well.
Mm.
You know, so you can sell something to someone once, as I said, but again, quality backs it up. Taste has to, for the second time, because you rely on food on your return customers, not your once-off customers. Mm. But to pique curiosity was create cool videos and imagery and good pictures and just good content that people wanted to see, not generic. So if you have a lot of people just like, oh yeah, I'll take over your social media and stuff, and I look at their other stuff and it's like, it's the most generic stuff I've ever seen. And you don't want that. You want to make it real. You want to get a sense. You want to get a vibe. And that's just what, that's like, Instagram wasn't as big when I was starting off, but I saw that people were focusing more and more on the quality of pictures and camera. Especially with food as well. So we wanted to put a kind of people behind it. So from locals to somewhat like celebrities as well to just doing private events and showing that, going to weddings, getting pictures with the bride and groom, all this kind of stuff, like to make it a more personal vibe and asking people questions, getting them to recommend stuff to us. And that's why I said I push innovation on my staff and customers, because I want them to tell us what we can do different and what can we offer them. And that's how the whole design and like imagery was so important, I think.
It's quite a labor intensive business. How do you're one man,
you've
X amount of hours in the day. How do you plan that out? Like, I mean, how many locations or where are you now?
So at the moment, I just have one location open at the moment. But this weekend, we have three. Mm. So we're in the Street Food Festival in Marion Square for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I have a private event tomorrow. And then I'm in People's Park and then Blackrock. So I have three locations on the Sunday. So to train someone is quite tricky because it takes someone to learn competently about a week. It's not just like, scoop, see you later, here you go.
Yeah.
You know, each one, and like you could do it badly, or you could do it well. So different ratios, different blends, different everything freeze at different temperatures. So depending on the ingredients, so we don't have any freezing agents in ours to make it freeze faster, all this kind of stuff. So someone can make a product that we've shown them how to do really badly. It's like cooking. You know, if you time it too long, it's over frosted. It's over frozen. If it's under cooked, it's still not at a good consistency. So it's quite tough to train people. But then once they get it, they are able to pass on that skill on to other people. Now me and a few others still train the new people that come in, but it does still hurt when people you've shown come in, you've trained, you've shown the works, you've shown them the imagery, you've shown them like customer service, how it's so important, and then the actual techniques and styles and everything, and then they leave for more hours or whatever. But that's completely up to them. Like I never hold any grudges to people that leave for a genuine reason. You know, you can't, because that's life. You know, if you were to get hung up on that, okay, obviously it's very frustrating, and you're like, why peak summer? But if you're to get hung up on that, eat your life. So like, just keep moving forward, just kind of just deal with what you got in front of you, you know, and just keep rolling away, so to speak, you know.
Good point.
Yeah, thanks.
So
it's not my first.
What's your? So we're in the middle of summer now, July, August. So how do you plan out then towards the winter?
Yeah.
What's your kind of like next? I hate asking people what's your 6 month plan.
Of course.
Where are you looking to next? I see you're doing a lot of brand activations.
You're
all over my LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You keep popping up.
Well, that's the plan. Yeah. You know, I had a food truck out in Bray at the start of the summer as well, and unfortunately we had to close that. Due to other reasons as well. So that was another one of our locations we had open. But again, I learned from that experience. I still have the food truck, and we're looking for different locations first, because I want to develop not just shops, markets, and food truck business models. So I'm able to have those three. Right. So if someone comes to me like, do you have a food truck by any chance? Like, yeah, I do. Do you have a market stall? I do. Do you have a shop in it? I do. You know, so I'm able to adapt to any situation now when it comes to if someone inquires about opening an RX zone somewhere. So half the food trucks, and then the private events is a massive one for me. But I love doing the private events. It's like, for me, the personal element of it, and actually just dealing with people, is what gets me out of bed. Like, the actual societal part of it, just dealing with people, is what I love to do. And dealing with new clients, and then them returning back to us, is like, that's a win right there. Like, you can take, like, the fact that someone, like a lot of our clients, will have gotten us in once and then like 8 times from there. And that means you're doing something right. So I'm going to focus a lot on the private events and kind of giving them the best possible experience that I can. Different products, innovations to keep going during the winter. So we developed this form of waffle. It's called a waffle pop that we have in our store in Black Rock. And it's going very well at the moment. We make all the batter from scratch in store. So it's no powders. We make it all from scratch. So like, I developed recipes all during the winter, worked with different chefs and bakers to develop different ratios and blends for waffles. I didn't want to just be generic, I wanted to be able to make it ourselves and stand over the fact that we make it from scratch in our stores as well. Mm. So that's what I wanted to do. So it's all product and idea generation to get us through winter. Obviously it's a harder time of the year.
Yeah.
But then also the private event side, I would like to open more retail locations. So Black Rock is going great. It's coming on our 2 year anniversary now in August, and it's going well. Obviously it's not down in Main Street, so it's quite hard to get the footfall there. But for where it is, what it is, 15 square meters, it's going well. Would I like to open up a new location? I think everyone would, but I don't know if that's, I don't know, something to do with an ego type situation. It's like, oh yeah, I want to open up 7 different locations in the space of a year.
Yeah, I think there is an element to that. You see that a lot.
You see that a lot. I mean, I've seen that with a few cafes and a few places that I know. And it's just like, wait a minute, take a step back. It's like, you're paying this, that, and the other. Then you're paying like 90 grand, 100 grand of key money. How many do you have to sell to just break even? And the banks, if you're to take out a loan, so I did Flender. So it's a peer-to-peer finance. And that was another massive thing for me. I thought that I didn't want to go to the bank. I didn't want to ask people for money. I wanted to go to Flender.
So what is Flender for people who haven't heard of it?
So it's peer-to-peer finance. So you put together your business plan of what you want to achieve, what you want to do, and then just they put you live on the platform, and then you have to raise a certain amount of money. We raised like €35,000 in 22 hours.
Wow.
So it was one of the fastest ones campaigns to ever go. So I was like, I was watching the number going up. I was like, oh my God, like this is not just friends and family. These are people that I don't know that really believe in what we've done, that they've seen credibility,
yeah.
not just like in myself and the business, you know, that they believe whatever happens, they'll keep going. And we hit the target that we wanted in less than a day. I was like, this is incredible. I can't believe that. You know, and that's kind of what gave me a bit more motivation. It happened in January, so it's like, all right, let's kick on. And that's when I opened the food truck. Unfortunately, I had to close it, but you know what? I learned a lot. And I still have a lot of the assets as well. So you move on, and then you look for different locations. That's why I wanted to go to food trucks route, because you know, key monies and retail and all this kind of stuff. It's a good way to get around it, but again, permits and stuff are a nightmare. So like retail would be, if I get a good location, good price, you know.
Any landlords are listening.
Yeah, exactly. Retail. If you have any recommendations, let me know. But they're like, you can't, it's very hard. And then, because obviously the market's gone up for people interested in like different locations, from cafes, like constantly popping open, like just rates are going up and up and up. And it is strangling somewhat small businesses as well. But you have to just make the, you don't want to just go, it's like, this is a great location. It's going to cost me hundreds of thousands to get it out. For me, I'm selling ice cream at the end of the day, you know? So I need to make sure that the business plan works all throughout the year and that we're giving our customers constant service. I just don't want to throw it, like just random like squad in there and just be like, okay, look after it. I want to make sure that full care and attention for putting that much money into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to find that in Dublin at the moment. But yeah, I would like to open more retail. But at the moment, I'm focusing on the private events. We have Electric Picnic this summer. We have the Big Grill Food Festival, which is one of the most fantastic food festivals.
Really?
Have you been?
No, I haven't.
Oh, go. It is amazing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like the food, the caliber of food.
Where is that on?
It's in Herbert Park.
Okay.
It's mid-August. I want to say the 14th of August.
Okay.
I'm fairly sure. 14th to the 18th. So it's 4 days. Really good foods, all beer, food festival, really good vibes, stages, live music, and the best quality of food. You're gonna find some of the best chefs I've ever like I've done it 2 years now, and I'm always blown away with some of the work they do. Yeah, so getting the chance to actually meet them at them, and then having a place with them is just like, this is pretty cool. This is like why you start off in the food business, to work with some of these best chefs. Like, chefs are flown in from the States, Michelin star chefs from London, like proper really good chefs, and to be alongside them and then them giving you the thumbs up and good review, and you're like, nice, you know. To be alongside them is pretty special, you know.
As opposed to, Ireland seems to be going through like a massive food revolution at the minute. Like, it's phenomenal. Like, we're sitting in Temple Bar now, obviously, but in a mile squared around here, the choice is just crazy.
And that's some of the issues that are happening as well at the moment. Like, the standard is going up so high. Don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic thing that standards are going up so high, but how do you differentiate yourself? How do you, if you're a food person, how do you create a brand as well? But, or are you able to create a brand and not food? You know, you like, can you create, like, as I said, the brand, but is the quality and product going to back up what you're talking about? Are people going to go there and be like, eh, it's a letdown, I'm not going back. You know, can you
so
do
much
both?
Choice, yeah.
So much choice. Can you do both? If one person is doing what you do, but the brand isn't there, and the service isn't there, and the quality isn't there, then, you know, it's tough. It is a very hard sector, especially with ice cream as well. It's so, like, competitive. But, yeah, no, it is, Ireland is going through a food revolution. I find as well, like, it wasn't half this when I was starting off. Like, I've seen so many market stalls opening, from vegans to all this, that, and the other free from foods to more organic and free range. And that's just the way it's going as well. Like, from the lack of single-use plastics as well. Since day one, we've never used plastics. We always use compostable. We have a compost bin on site in our store in Black Rock, so we compost all of our stuff as well now. So, like, all of our spoons, coffee cups, lids, everything that we use to give to customers is all compostable. And that's an ethos I saw. Like, I started in 2016, before the compost revolution, so to speak, had even started.
It's only the last 12 months, really, the media has just been, like,
really after.
So that's pretty
but
advanced.
I saw it back in 2016, because I was, like, working food, and I was like, surely, like, this plastic spoon, like, what's going on with it after I get rid of it? It's just going to the landfill.
Where's it going?
Yeah, what's the story with it? Because I didn't want to walk into a room And someone like opens the door, is like, this is all the spoons you've used over the last 3 years. They're like, oh my God, like this is a mountain.
I suppose as a business as well.
Yeah.
You often get beaten with certain sticks.
Yeah.
If there's something gone wrong, they'll use you as an example.
Exactly.
Of big business.
But that's
wrong.
It. Like, and if your brand is on that, because like all of our like tubs and spoons and stuff.
Yeah.
If they're plastics and then something happens or it's found somewhere, they're like, what are you doing with that? Or whatever, you know, like all the markets now, all the food markets, I pitched to them like 2 years ago to go green, and they've just gone green this week.
Okay.
So the People's Park in Dunleary has gone green officially this week, you know, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, but I saw it happening about 3 years ago, and I wanted to jump on that and use that kind of stuff, which is great. But then obviously you have some businesses still using plastics, but that'll all be phased out as well. So.
Would you ever look at products, or are you purely focused on the kind of service end for now?
As in like tubbed and shelf?
Your own kind of...
Yeah, so that's actually one of the reasons why we won Best Established Business was my range of products that I'm bringing on, working with farmers in Midlands, Ireland, to create tubbed ice cream from different flavours, to out-of-the-box flavours, to more of a kind of an Irish Ben and Jerry, so to speak. So meringues from Clare to Wexford strawberries, you know, not just the generic type of stuff, something
fantastic.
A bit different. And that's what I'm working on. It's very hard, it's very, like, people are fighting for shelf space in the likes of Dunnes and Super Value. It's rough. So I want to start selling them in our stores and get a vibe from the customers.
Yeah.
So far, so good. Anyway, we haven't actually sold any yet, but I've given free samples out to customers. They love it so far. So that's the dairy version that we're very happy with.
Excellent.
So at the moment it's tubbed, but it's not designed, and that's what I want to do next. I want to do a completely out of the box design.
Phenomenal.
You know, so it's not just your usual tub. Is it going to be something else?
Yeah.
You know, that's
well, everything you've done has been pretty unique,
but
so
that's what I want
to
encapsulate as well. Like, and what annoys me is like you'll find a lot of the tubs would have a plastic spoon in the lid, you know, that type of way.
Yeah.
Why does that have to be there? Why can't it be something else?
Yeah.
You know, can we think of an innovation, not just like Ben & Jerry's Häagen-Dazs, all different tubbed ice cream on the shelf. And then you have your high end, you have your low end, but they're all in the same tubs. Can you do something a bit different? Like, what would stand out? Because I was always told, if you're going to put a product on the shelf, the design and packaging has to be kick-ass. Like, it has to be stand out. And that's what you have to do. So still working at that. Taste and quality is there when it comes to our tubs. And we're working at having dairy-free and vegan options as well. So there'll be two dairy versions, two vegan options as well, to give everyone the option, you know, so there's no one left out. And that's the ethos that I said from day one, no one to be left out. And so everyone's like, so if you go to the shelf, it's like, oh yeah, I'll grab that, it's vegan, it's dairy-free, or I'm going to go for their traditional.
You just hit the crest of the wave as well in terms of things like that.
Exactly. So they'll all be gluten-free, palm oil-free, hydrogenated oil-free, like our ice cream is already. But I want to potentially bring that to supermarkets. Now, it's just distribution and scaling is a very hard thing, and packaging and stuff. So I just have to try to figure that out now. But it's exciting. It's a project that I think there is a market for and that we could potentially work at. And so far, so good with it anyway. So I've been working on it for a good couple of months. I brought it to the IBYE Young Entrepreneur of the Year and they loved it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so did different flavours like rum raisin, just a bit different.
Yeah.
And they loved it. So
the Irish aspect as well.
Exactly.
Cool, extra strawberries, very cool.
That's it. Something to give customers a bit of a different situation than your usual raspberry ripple, you know, type of way in like Super Value. But I'll start small. I don't want to go to big store straight away, start from my own places, maybe sell them in market stalls, just get a vibe.
Yeah, it's worked so far, so.
Yeah, test the market as opposed to putting a load of capital into something and be like, because I've known market stalls that, okay, yeah, I'm going to go retail, have a load of retail, and they've lost their shirt and end up falling. You know, so what's the point in putting so much money into something and we'll just test it first.
Yeah.
You know.
Especially when you have, that's how you build your business.
Yeah,
you
so we have our market base, so why not just use that?
Yeah.
Now, from now on, you know, just kind of go from there.
What is this world record thing that's all over your social media?
Okay, yeah, so I don't know if... So basically when you were younger, I don't know, did you ever used to get the Guinness World Record?
Always.
Yeah, so my brother always used to get it off our neighbour and I always used to rob it on him and read through it religiously. Like, I would know every record and I loved it. I was obsessed with it. So I always said one day I would attempt a world record. I was like, all right, what am I good at? I was like, okay, I'm going to make an ice cream. So why don't I do it? So after a couple of months of starting the business, I applied to the Guinness World Records. and to, for them to just hear me. Actually, no one has ever done rolled ice cream at all in a Guinness World Record. It's never been attempted anywhere in the
brand
world.
Brand new record.
And brand new record. And I approached them, I sent a big long spiel, and they said no. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to do it again. So I sent it back into them, and you have to keep paying like 10 euro or 5 euro.
To apply, yeah. I suppose they get a lot of crazy.
They get hundreds a day, thousands a day, you know. So I was like, okay, try it again. And then eventually they sent my inquiry to the higher-ups. And then so on and so forth. After a couple of months of emailing back and forth, obviously they get a lot of emails. It takes a few weeks for them to get back to you, so it gets a bit frustrating. But anyway, they finally broke it down to these are the only records that you will be allowed to attempt. So one was the most ice cream made over 24 hours, and the other was by a team, and then the other one was most ice cream made by one person in 24 hours. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do a team, because I wanted to give the business a good go at it as well, not just myself. I wanted to create something around the business as well. So then after months and months and months of planning, getting everything ready and telling staff, like, okay, we're going to do it. Further down the line, I got with Guinness, and then we started organizing contracts and non-disclosures and all this kind of stuff, because the amount of paperwork to sign up with Guinness is phenomenal.
Really?
Trademarks to legals to you cannot alter this because this will infringe on that. It was incredible. My sister's a lawyer, so she helped big time with that.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was handy. But anyway, so it got to the point and I was like, okay, I think we could do this. Like, I just need another good team to help me. So I went to UCD. So I've always had a strong part of UCD in me. Like, I played for UCD in soccer and football and stuff like that. So I've always had a big place for it there. So I approached one of my ex-employees who then got a job in UCD, Thomas Monaghan, with the UCD Students Union. So then UCD Students Union and Arctic Stone came together to attempt an official world record in UCD in March. Right. So we sat down in November, started planning everything from there, putting it all together, and like sleepless nights up till like 5-6 in the morning, like, oh, this has to be like that, and then this has to be filmed. So everything has to be filmed with Guinness, 24 hours of constant footage. Any breaks, they cancel the whole record. So you could go 23 and a half hours, the camera can cut, and they'll cancel the whole record.
I always wondered how they track that. Okay,
it's phenomenal. Like, I couldn't believe how much was into it. So anyway, paperwork, and like, this has to be done. And like, then you have to get the HSC to approve everything, because obviously if you're doing food, it has to be fit for human consumption as well. So you have to make sure there's no cross-contaminations or anything. So anyway, we sat down, we put a plan to everything is going to be gluten-free, so no one could feel left out. We're going to have dairy-free options as well, so everyone could get involved. And then on March 27th or 26th, we set the deadlines. Like, that's going to be the day, because I think Brexit was the plan for the 30th of March. So and then the Guinness World Records is a British company, or an English company as well. So I didn't want anything crossing over. So anyway, we set it for there. And then we paid for a mediator, for Guinness, official Guinness adjudicator, to fly over from England to UCD in Dublin. And like, that is expensive as well. So really, really expensive to get them to fly over. They come in with the clipboard.
This is amazing.
I'll show you pictures. Like, it was the funniest thing. So this guy looks like a Bond villain. And he had the clipboard in like this big official Guinness World Record guy walking around like that.
Coolest job, the most random job in the world.
Best job ever. He's been in India.
World Records.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I was like, where do I get your job?
Class.
If I ever like was to stop Arctic Stone, I'd be a Guinness adjudicator. Like, it's incredible. Like, to get paid, I had to put him up in a hotel. I had to pay for his taxis and everything like that. And then he was only there for like 8 hours. I want to say, and flew back.
Wow.
Yeah, but
so we can make sure these guys aren't jokers.
Yeah,
they're doing it properly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. So a few weeks before that, I got on to Ernest & Young, and Just Eat, and Down to Earth Materials, who are compostable specialists. So they all sponsored the event. So I had to sit down with their boards and everything like that, and be like, "This is what I want to do. I'm expecting thousands of students come here. You can advertise, you can do this, that, and the other, brand activations, whatever you want."
Clever.
At the event. Clever. And then they ended up giving me a good bit of, I wouldn't have been able to fund it myself, because it cost, I'd say, about 11 to 12 grand.
Whoa.
Overall. Yeah. So it was an expensive, like, just to get the Guinness fella over, it was like $7,000-$7,500.
What?
Yeah, just because then you sign off on the trademarks and the legals and everything like that. So you have to pay to to come over, but also the trademarks. So that was the whole ordeal. And then you're buying all the stock and everything like that. So got Ernst & Young to give us a bit of money, Just Eat. That was cool, like that they believed that I was just by myself approaching these businesses, like, I want to set up a Guinness World Record. And they were like, you're mental. I was like, ah, sure, look, give it a go. Yeah. See what happens, you know? And then they said, yeah. So they helped fund the whole thing. And then as well as UCD SU, we all came together and put the plan together. And then on the 28th, we lined up 11, 12 cold plates. And I trained all my staff. So there was 20 of us, I want to say, on the day rolling. And I was expecting couple of people coming in and out, a couple of hundred, like, because we've done free events in UCD where we give out 100 free ice creams and 200 people show up.
Yeah.
You know, 500 people show up. Yeah. So we're like expecting a bit of mayhem. Anyway, 7,500 people showed up.
Students do love a free.
They love free stuff. They love free stuff. I couldn't believe it. So we set up and then I had to blow, good friend Thomas Monin blew the air horn because each Guinness had 24, no one's ever attempted a 24-hour record in Ireland before. Thomas Monaghan blew the horn to start the whole thing, and then we all started making ice cream. Go, 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 bang, bang. Each one was given out completely for free, and then people give donations. So it was for Peter McFerry and Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. All the proceeds went to them.
Amazing.
So people would throw money in the bucket, get the ice cream, have happy days going. We had DJs, we had Red Bull. They were all like blaring tunes and giving out Red Bulls and stuff. It was incredible. I've never experienced something like that again in my life. Like 20 people making ice cream, plus 100 volunteers of topping up ice cream, of keeping things clean, of filmers. Yeah, so like me and Thomas Monaghan and the student union organized like 100 volunteers, 7,500 people. We had to get security. We did over 32,500 ice cream rolls. We raised like a good couple of grand for a charity. I think like €4,000 for charity, just over €4,000. And yeah, so then it went on 24 hours, rolling nonstop. Some of the rollers that were with me were just like, they were dead in their feet, but they kept going because they wanted it just as much.
Yeah.
And
were you able to swap people in and out?
Yeah, so people could come out. It was a rotation system. If you were feeling tired, at one point there was only three of us still rolling because three in the morning. So like people were in the break room, passed out. Like one fella fell asleep in his head in the pizza box. So, like it was hilarious. Like. And it was just constantly going, like, and a lot of us stayed up for 24 hours. I did, and I can say that you can actually fall asleep standing up. Didn't think it was possible. Your body just completely shuts off, and you're like, well, you know. But anyway, making ice cream, going, and just constant rotation. People coming in, like, thousands upon thousands. Like, the queue was 72 minutes wait, and it was completely free. We were doing thousands at the one time, and... So
what happens at the end?
Yeah, so unfortunately it went on through the night, and then at 4 in the morning there were still people coming in from Coppers and stuff like that, going to the ice cream party and stuff like that. It was hilarious. And then families and kids coming, that was another thing that caught me as well, was families were coming in like 5 in the morning before school. Lads in suits before they went to work in town were coming in, getting taxis in, getting ice cream, going into town to work at 6 in the morning.
That's crazy.
The queue was back to like thousands of people by 8 o'clock the next day. So it was 10 to 10, and then the horn went. And then I sat in the back room with the official Guinness adjudicator. Everyone was just completely capitulated, like dead in their feet. We were all lying, like there was hundreds of people in the auditorium. I sat in the back room counting with the Guinness adjudicator, just going through everything. And he was like, unfortunately, yeah, you didn't hit the target. Yeah. So unfortunately, Guinness gave us a target of 40,000 rolls to hit in 24 hours. So they have to give you a specific amount. It was incredibly high. But I was like, where did you justify? Because I argued with them for ages. They were like, this is the final total. And I argued, I was like, that can't be done. But they were like, okay. But anyway, so we did 32,500.
Oh.
I know. And I was chatting to him. And he was like, Kevin, I feel so sorry for you. Because a lot of the 24-hour, like he's gone to the back arse of Russia for a 24-hour marathon. He's walked in. They've paid thousands to get him there. He's walked in and been like, this is a shambles. Like, there's nothing. Like, it's a fail automatically. He was like, this is one of the best and smoothest operations we've seen because hundreds of people got involved to actually make sure this happened. And anyway, so we got the world record. We did it more. We made more ice cream than anyone's ever made. But it's just not going to be in Guinness, unfortunately. But like, it was, you never know, I might attempt it again.
I was going to say, you know, sound like a guy.
It's always something there. Yeah, it's just there. It's like, and then straight after the next day, we were in the like WhatsApp groups. We were like, so this time next year, we do it again. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, why not? Like, we'll give it another go. Like, we were so close and we raised a lot of money. We created an incredible buzz. We were all over the media, like RTE.
I was going to say it must have done good news for business as well.
Yeah, like people, loads of people came to it and they're like, oh yeah, we were at the event there and you see the world record, and then they were back like to our shop the next day, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it was an incredible, like it was the best 24 hours of my life. That was the hardest. Like it was like I was seeing stars and dizzy and all that, but like 7 coffees, like dehydrated, drinking a Red Bull to follow. But like, it was an incredible experience. And just like to say that we attempted an official, not just in the Guinness World, an official Guinness World Record with all the logistics,
yeah,
and everything had to be spot on, was the hardest day. And we were able to do it. We just didn't hit the number, unfortunately, because at 3 or 4 in the morning, there was 3 of us. We may have done it, but like, you can't, like people, like 24 hours, they can't really stop.
You'll know next time.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I sense we'll be sitting down again in the future.
Yeah, you never know. Like, I do intend on getting into that book one day, you know, and I know what's involved now, and if we were tempted, why not? Like, you know, we raised a good bit of money, we made a lot of thousands of people happy, and everyone really enjoyed it, you know. So yeah, it was an incredible experience, and if you're ever gonna set a Guinness World Record, I'd highly recommend it.
What a good story.
Yeah.
One final question.
Well,
you're ready. What book would you recommend?
Okay.
So every week,
yeah,
you give away a book to someone, so
yeah,
all they have to do to win it is tag
yeah,
Arctic Stone and myself.
Yeah.
It can be LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever, just as long as they tag us,
yeah,
to win a copy of this book. What
yeah,
book has kind of made an impact for you in your business?
Well, I found one of the books, I actually never used to be a big reader up until the last 2 years, so to speak. So I've only really started getting into the business books now in the last year. I never really read too much, and I do regret not reading when I was younger. Like, I really, really do. I mean, it wouldn't be the fastest, but the best book I've read in the last 2 years that stood out for me that's kind of had an impact would be The Power of Habit.
Love it.
Yeah, it's
amazing,
a very
book,
good one. Have you read it yourself?
Amazing book.
Yeah, it really had an impact,
yeah,
on me, from even getting up in the morning to having a plan of just,
yeah,
even just sitting there and stretching for a few minutes, just getting a clear head, you know, doing a bit of going for a run in the morning, just having structure and just kind of doing the same thing and making it in your subconscious as opposed to your conscious, you know, like you're doing it automatically.
Yeah.
And that's what I just found really works, you know, when it comes to either dealing with people or just day-to-day routine. And just
especially
yourself,
when you're busy like you are.
Exactly.
You
just
need that.
You need to step away sometimes and just create, like, just sit back and just, yeah, feel good. And that's what I just found The Power of Habit was really good for.
It's a
yeah,
savage recommendation.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about you and the business?
People can learn more a lot about us. We do a lot on Instagram. You can either follow me on LinkedIn as well. I'm gonna try focus a lot on LinkedIn now over the next couple of months. I found it really influential for contacting event organizers or event planners and meetups and stuff, you know. So people have gotten onto me and we've created events from LinkedIn, you know, just getting in touch with me. So I'm gonna focus on that, but for the business aspect as well. So Facebook, Instagram, our website, Twitter. I use Twitter a bit, not mad, but Instagram, Facebook.
And they're all under the brand name?
Yeah, all Arctic Stone Arm, yeah. They'll all be there.
And your own personal one then is?
I actually don't. You have a personal Instagram.
But you have a personal, what's your LinkedIn? For
LinkedIn, yeah, it's
to?
Just Kaelan Cullen.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I'll link everything down below.
Definitely.
Kaelan, pleasure.
Thanks, Gary. Really appreciate it, man.
And that's a wrap on episode 19 of The Entrepreneur Experiment. If you want to win a copy of the book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, simply share this episode across any form of social media you like. Just make sure to tag myself, Mr. Gary Fox, and Arctic Stone Ice Cream. I'll see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. for a new episode. See you then.